Blog Talk Radio.
Now that Boston has officially become a majority-minority city, with 53% of its residents non-white, it's time to showcase the many accomplishments of its diverse citizens. That's now been done in a graphically rich new coffee table book, Portraits of Purpose, a Tribute to Leadership. Portraits of Purpose is a visual chronicle of 127 Boston-based African-American leaders and their allies who have continued to pursue freedom and justice in a post-civil rights era. Renowned Boston photographer Don West and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Kenneth J. Cooper teamed up to capture the images and share the stories of these significant individuals of conscience. From Charles Ogletree Jr. to Chang'an Tang to Emma Lewis and the up-and-coming Tulane Montgomery, these leaders of actions are portrayed for the significant contributions they have made to the region and the country. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we are well into September. It's like summer is, you blink and it's gone, and I'm certainly quite busy, and I'm sure you are too. But we want to stop and pay tribute to some very significant individuals in Boston. Many people may look at Boston and think of it as, oh, that's a city that had problems in the past with busing, or it's a New England town and there are not many people of color there. Wrong. Think again. This city is very vibrant, it's bustling, and there have been people throughout the ages who have done significant things to really bring it into prominence. And now the city really is the majority minority city. With the school system, probably 87% of the students in the Boston public schools are non-white. So with that said, multiculturalism and diversity is alive. And I am really excited. I'm going to bring on just a few minutes two individuals who I've known for quite some time, have a lot of respect for. They're well-versed and talented, and they put those talents into action with a brand-new book. I call it a coffee table book because it's big, and it is beautiful, lots of great shots and profiles of these extraordinary individuals. Two things I want to bring to your attention before we start the show with our guests, our special guests. Number one is that our November 5th multicultural conference is right around the corner. I'm so excited about the guest lineup, the people who are going to be there, the networking that's going to take place. We have scheduled Sarah and Abraham Padini from Chennai, India. We're bringing them over from India. It's their very first time in Boston. And, oh, my goodness, the information they're going to share with us about diversity from an Indian perspective is going to blow your mind. So you want to be at the November 5th conference at UMass Boston. Secondly, our luncheon speaker is a young man I've seen grow up, and I'm sure that the next volume of this book we're going to talk about shortly, he'll be in there, Gary Morton. He is the director for Give with Liberty, which is part of the Liberty Mutual Foundation. And I've known him for many years, most especially now as the chapter president for the National Black MBA Association. He is our luncheon keynote speaker. We have distinguished panelists, roundtable discussions. It's going to be a great activity and a great opportunity for you to really get deeper into this diversity discussion and space. You can go to my website, mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. Get all the information. Sign up now while the rates are low and bring your colleagues to this great event. And then we're going to India February during school vacation week here in Massachusetts, and that's going to be a dynamic trip. All that information is at tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com. So two great events, one in India, one here in the United States, but all about multiculturalism and diversity in a very significant way. So those two websites will give you more information. You can sign up, or you can certainly call me at 508-947-5755, and I'll be happy to give you more information. Well, I want to bring on veteran photographer. Every time I go to a major event here in Boston, he is there snapping pictures away, as he's been doing for many years. And then a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author who also spent time in India for about 3 years, and he's been very helpful in me putting these trips together that we're now taking to India. Kenneth Cooper is his name, and Don West is our photographer. They are the co-authors of Portraits of Purpose. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Carol, and thank you very much for allowing us to share our book with you and your audience.
Absolutely.
Hello, Carol. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have both of you gentlemen with me. Don, tell us, give us a sense of, obviously, you've been in the business for a long time. Why this book now? Why is it so important for all of our audiences, especially people who don't live in Boston?
Well, the book really covers a historical perspective of the last 30 years of leadership in the inner city of Boston. And when I speak of leadership, I'm speaking of people who have made a difference in the areas of the justice system, housing, healthcare, and government. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, we had a problem in the late 70s of busing here and desegregation. And
right.
Value of disruption kind of kept abreast in the city for quite a few years. But this book really brings together many of the individuals who made a difference and made change since that time. And so it's really a microcosm of what goes on in many of the large cities around the country.
That's awesome. That's great. And Ken, what was your real keen interest, not only in the writing the profiles in the book, but teaming up with Don West to create this great publication?
Well, throughout my career as a journalist, which goes back, I hate to count the numbers, but it's almost 40 years now,
wow.
I've spent a lot of time writing about social justice. And in fact, my Pulitzer Prize, the one I shared at the Boston Globe in 1984, is about race and racial issues in the city of Boston. So it's subject matter I've written quite a lot about. So I was interested in that. And I was intrigued by getting the opportunity to learn more about the city where I've lived more longer than I live anywhere else, including my hometown of Denver, and learning about people in the book who I didn't know, although I knew more than half of them starting out.
That's great. And Don, tell us, when did the project start? How long, what was the procedure that you and Ken followed to compile, first of all, to identify and decide on these 127 people, and then take it from concept to full implementation?
Well, I had been a news and event photographer in Boston starting in 1980. And in 1997, the Museum of African American History on Beacon Hill commissioned me to do an exhibit. And deciding on what to do for an exhibit, I thought that since I'd had such experience with so many events and rallies and campaigns around social issues and saw these individuals stepping forward and making a difference, I thought that they deserved to be highlighted and for tribute to be paid to them. So this is how we constructed the exhibit. It was a photographic exhibit highlighting these people. It was about 25 images the first time around. This was in 1997.
Uh-huh.
We repeated it the next year, and over the years it was shown in many different venues in the city. In 2011, probably was the most significant moment. The Urban League of Boston had its national convention here. The Urban League in general had its national convention, and we had the opportunity to show the exhibit at that convention, and the value of that was giving individuals across the country an insight into the individuals who were involved in the changes in Boston since the late 70s, because quite a bit had changed, and the Urban League hadn't been here in some 30 years, and so it was quite a milestone that they had their convention that year. So the value of understanding what had happened and who had made differences was significant, and that then was recognized by Eastern Bank, as a matter of fact, And we combined together. You know, we had talked about a book in the past, and we spoke with them about it. They wanted to support that, which they did. And we needed a writer, one of significance, and certainly Ken Cooper is that person. And so we joined together to promote this book and produce this book with my photographs and him doing the profiles.
Right. You know, what I think is really significant, I've written books, and I hear a lot of people who have great book ideas, and the ideas never leave their heads. But here you took a project which started off with your own photographic talent and teamed up with an expert, got the funding through Eastern Bank, and finished the project. So if anybody hears anything today of significance, it's how you can take an idea and find underwritable dollars to make your concept come true, and you've actually done that. I want to talk about a couple of people in the book. Obviously, I know a lot of these individuals. The picture I'm looking at now is Joyce Faribault Bowling, and I think she is standing behind a statue that was commissioned by Fern Allen, I believe. And I know that because Fern Allen was my daughter's art teacher when she was at Park School. So it's just like,
yes.
I know these folks. I know the importance of us. One of you tell us about Joyce Faribault Bowling and her significant contribution to the society, to Boston.
Well, Joyce Faribault, before she was a bowling, was Joyce Faribault, and she has been an entrepreneur and a political analyst and a contributor for many years. She worked on Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign. So she's been very significant and in the forefront of activity. She met Bruce Bowling of the very well-known Bowling family, and he's also in the book, along with his father and his brother. And he was the first president of the Boston City Council, first man of color in that position. And so at some point she and Bruce met and fell in love and got married. And so she is still out there doing all of the activities that she's been significant involved with, behind the scenes often, in making things happen.
Great. That's a great job. And can one of you, maybe Ken, can you speak about Charles Ogletree and who he is and his significance, not only to Boston, but certainly to the country?
Yes, certainly. Of course, Charles Ogletree is a Harvard Law School professor with an endowed chair, who's also been a civil rights lawyer. Perhaps nationally, he's best known as the lawyer who represented Anita Hill at the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings for the U.S. Supreme Court seat back in the 90s. But locally, Charles Ogletree is the kind of guy who, despite his stature as a Harvard Law professor with an endowed chair, you will see in the community of
right.
Black community of Boston, turning up to give speeches, to give remarks, or just to be there. He's very well connected with the community. He knows people. People know him, not just by name. He has relationships
right.
with these folks. And he also runs something called the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute attached to the Harvard Law School, whose mission is to train the next generation of civil rights lawyers. Charles Hamilton Houston, of course, being the founding lawyer of what became eventually the legal arm of the NAACP that won so many of the school desegregation lawsuits leading up to and including Brown versus the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm. A great man, I'm glad you guys have highlighted him because he is such a great gentleman. There are a lot of high-profile people here in Boston who are connected with universities, whether it's Harvard, MIT, Boston University, Northeastern, whatever, and typically many of them just stay in their academic communities where they are entrenched in those communities and their relationships are all there. And then they pack up and they fly off to wherever on the weekends, or if they have a national event, again, you just really connect them with the organization that they're a part of. Charles Ogletree, he is definitely in the community. He's very active at St. Paul AME Church in Cambridge. His wife is very active as well with Children's Services of Roxbury. And so I look at them really as role models because of their prominence, their attachment and connection to President Barack Obama, but also the impact that they're having in the community. Don West, what about, we're talking with Don West and Kenneth Cooper, who have written a wonderful, wonderful book that I encourage everyone to get called Portraits of Purpose, A Tribute for Leadership. And there are 127 people who are highlighted in this great book. It's a coffee table book, a great book, people who are either from Boston, who made a significant difference in Boston, but there's some kind of connection with Boston with this book. Don West, I believe that you cover Nelson Mandela. Tell us the connection with Nelson Mandela.
Well, that was probably the highlight of my photographic experience, social justice experience of the last 30 yes. years. I had been very much involved in the anti-apartheid movement in the 80s and 90s, and when he was released from prison, I made a point that I wanted to be his photographer when he came to Boston. And he came to Boston because so much work had been done here for him in the anti-apartheid movement that he felt the need to come and speak to the people of Boston. So I had the opportunity for a day and a half to be with him through his travels through the city and the big rally that he had on the Esplanade in Boston. It was quite a significant experience.
Mm-hmm. That was in June of 1990. Is that not correct, Don?
That's correct, right.
Yep, and I remembered well because I was there. I was there, and I was married at the time, and my former husband was very prominent in the community and had a leadership role in terms of orchestrating his visit here. So that
well,
was
as a matter of fact, you know, he went to many different sites in Boston, starting with the airport, and his first
yes.
stop was at Madison Park High School, where your
right.
husband was there, part of the group of people that welcomed him there. And mm-hmm. as you say, he had an instrumental part in organizing. And from there, Mandela went to the Kennedy Library, where all of the, what we might call the movers and shakers of the town, mm-hmm. were there. And Stevie
right.
Wonder sang, and it was quite a significant event. Jackie
yeah.
Kennedy was still alive at that time. And
okay.
From there, he went on to the Esplanade, where some, I guess, around 30,000 or so people turned out to
yes.
see him. And,
yes.
And
children... And the children sang because my three children at that time had the privilege of singing for him and for Winnie Mandela, and that's when they learned Kosi Sikelele Afrika, the national anthem of South Africa. So
yeah.
that was a thrilling time period, really thrilling for all of us who were here in the city at that time. Correct.
Well, that's the case where all three of us there were at the same time. I actually was at Madison Park High School and then also the Charles River Esplanade,
uh-huh.
covering Mandela's visit for the Washington Post. And
wow.
and writing his profile for the book, which is largely based on the Esplanade, was brought back memories of me being there on the Charles River Esplanade, which sort of had a Woodstock kind of outdoor rock concert kind of feel to it. And I'll never forget Mandela toy-toying and bouncing on his aging feet near the end there, which was a rousing moment.
That was a great time. All three of us in different walks of life coming together for this historic moment, and that's why you definitely had to cover that in this book. That was terrific. That was
yeah.
great. I'll give both of you a hit at who would you like to cover, Don West, next? Who would you like to profile in this great book?
That's a good question. You know, we could only, there's so many people deserving of being in the book, and I've often had the question of, why wasn't I in the book? You know, different people come up and ask me that. But
right.
the book, obviously, is a finite entity, and so we may do another book, but the reality is that the exhibit is still in effect and is growing. And so in that area, we can add more people, and I'd be happy to hear any suggestions from people because there are so many deserving people.
Right. I have a list for you, so we're going to talk offline about that, and I'm going to urge you to do another book just because this one is so significant, and as you can imagine, there are people couldn't be included in this first edition, but there's so many others who can be included in your second edition. Ken Cooper, what about Tulane Montgomery, who you do feature in the book? Give us a sense of who she is. She's a young woman who I also know. She's a Delta like I am. But tell us why she's in the book and her significance in this terrific book.
Yes, Tulane Montgomery is one of a handful of Gen Xers in the book.
Yep.
Who are sort of the next wave of leadership. And she has spent a lot of her time working on youth development activities, starting at her alma mater in Cambridge, Cambridge Regional Latin High School, where she developed an after-school program for troubled girls of color there and built their esteem. She later worked on a program at a middle school in Roxbury, the Timothy Middle School in Roxbury, a predominantly black neighborhood, the heart of the black community, and where she developed an after-school program where the idea was to teach academics through apprenticeships. And this was novel at the time. This was in the 90s, where after-school programs were basically recreational. So adding a academic component to an after-school program was an innovation. And she has done so many different things in a relatively short life. She's not young anymore, but we talk back and forth about what I would label her, these different things she's done. She's also worked for the United Way and worked with young people and developing them. And we came up with the term social innovator, which I think is correct. She's innovative. She's entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. And sort of like members of a generation, they sort of flip from one thing faster than we do.
Right.
But they sort of serial entrepreneurs, in their case a social entrepreneur, not so much a financial one. And she's, you know, part of that small group in here, which is actually larger than the group in here, of the next generation of leadership in this city.
Right.
Who tend to be collaborative, tend to be innovative, tend to work with relative ease across racial and ethnic lines.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That is great. She's a wonderful, very prolific young woman, and I can understand completely why she's included in the book. Now, Don, you also included non-African Americans. You have a number of people who are Latino, Asian, white in the book, including Kay Bourne. You worked at the Banner while she was there. Tell us about Kay Bourne and her significance. She's actually one of my Facebook friends, and I've known her for many years.
Well, as I have too, when I first started working with the Banner newspaper in Boston in the 80s, Kay was the arts editor for the paper. She was very significant in bringing forward the arts community in the black community over the years through that publication. She gave much light to the great talent that was within the community, which the larger newspapers were not covering. And so she has done that through the years. She writes for other publications now. She has she's very active on Facebook these days with a lot of informative information. And
yes.
So we had a great relationship, still do, and we went on assignments together. She worked very much with Elma Lewis in the arts community that she created. So Kay has been very significant. Without Kay, the arts community, the black arts community, would not have had the light of day as it had through her.
Right. And Kay is white, and that's why I wanted to profile her, because your book is multicultural, and you cover a number of people who are in the book. Very quickly, I want to go back and talk about Ted Landsmark, who is Theodore Ted Landsmark, who is in the book. And when you talk about busing and the unfortunate racial incidences that took place in the 70s, you really think about Ted Landsmark, who almost lost his life. Ken, what about him, and why is he so important?
Well, Ted, it's the photograph of Ted Landsmark that makes it appear back in the 70s when he was on City Hall Plaza in a business suit on his way to a business meeting that actually had to do with affirmative action. The photograph, the Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph of a white, angry young man about to impale him with a spear It looks like that in the photograph, although actually he was swinging the spear around and actually broke Ted's nose. That photograph is very well known across the country. And in my travels as a journalist, I've seen it in places like Philadelphia and Miami and people's offices. But Ted would say that's not his greatest significance. He was a young man then, and he actually built quite a record as an educator in this town. He was president of the Boston Architectural College for almost two decades until leaving last year, that position. And he built that school up and geared its mission for its graduates to do work for in architecture and design for community organizations who couldn't otherwise afford the services of a professional, and he diversified the student body. So he thinks of himself more as an educator rather than a guy who unfortunately got attacked by people having a violent reaction to school desegregation ordered by a U.S. District Court judge and upheld by upper higher courts.
Right, right. Well, this is just a snapshot of really wonderful and powerfully written and powerfully photographed individuals, either from Boston, connected in some way to Boston, most African Americans, but Latinos, Asians, and whites as well.
And Native Americans.
And Native Americans, that's right. So you have covered just about every ethnic group in this book, Portraits of Purpose, a tribute to leadership by photojournalist, renowned photojournalist Don West, and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and co-author who wrote the profiles in the book, Kenneth J. Cooper. Where can people get a copy of this book, Don?
Well, my first suggestion would be to go on our website, and that is www.portraitsofpurpose.us, and make sure you say US, not .com. Portraitsofpurpose.us, that's the first place you can go.
Okay.
If you wish to actually see the book in person, so to speak, the Museum of African American History on Beacon Hill has it in stock, as well as Barnes & Noble is another option.
Great. That's great. I salute both of you. You've got to write another book. I've got a list. I'm looking at my sheet of paper right here with people that I think would be great to include in your next edition. And just the significance, I know just by being in the travel and tourism industry and working in this industry, how important it is to give an accurate portrayal of people of color in this city instead of what people think they know. And you've done this ably so, in a way where people can really get involved and understand the significance of individuals from, again, Ted Lansma to Candelaria Silva to Charles Ogletree to Marie St. Flour and so, so many other people. Don West and Ken Cooper, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having
us. All right, take care. Thank you. All righty. And again, for our listeners, if you want to go to their website is Portraits of Purpose, one word, portraitsofpurpose.us, portraitsofpurpose.us. It's a great book. Would make great Christmas gifts, too, for people who you know. Thank you all so much for listening. And again, check out my websites, tellcarol.com for the trip to India, that's C-A-R-O-L-E, tellcarol.com, and also mssconnect.com for our November 5th multicultural conference. I'm excited about the lineup. I'm excited about what people are going to learn, and it really shows that empowerment begins when you believe in yourself and do things to really make a difference in your community, in your state, in your village, in your nation, in your society. Thanks so much. We will see you in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.